Now, can you relax in this meditation, letting go of yourself? Can you trust the Father for a few minutes without any need for you to do something, even to know something or to think something? Can you find that great void? That is one of the supreme luxuries of this work. Walking in that vast void where there's nothing for you to do, God is doing it. If your spiritual ear is open, you will know that deep within, Christ is saying, I am the resurrection. I am the way. I am the life. I am the truth. I and the Father are one. When you hear it, feel it, know it, you are in my peace. You are in the kingdom of heaven on earth. Let's pause now for a little refreshener and then begin in about 5 or 10 minutes. I think with that preliminary awareness, we can look a little differently at the 6th chapter of the Sermon on the Mount. We're told here, to take heed that ye do not your alms before men, to be seen of them, otherwise ye have no reward of your Father, which is in heaven. Now, this would seem superficially to mean that if you do your alms, your benevolences, to be seen of men, you have no reward from your Father, which is in heaven. But it has to go deeper than that now, because, you see, it's removing the sense of a personal you. That which stands in opposition to your realization of Christ's self is the personal sense of self which thinks it is doing benevolences. As long as there is that you, it must learn to die. That very you must say, whatever benevolences are done by the living Christ of being. There is no me to be good or bad, kind or unkind, generous or ungenerous. And there is no him or her toward whom I can be kind or unkind. You see then, the deeper meaning here is obviously not what you do with your physical wealth, but rather your consciousness that only the invisible spirit is. We are being stripped of personality, and wherever it rears its head in its multiple forms, the Sermon on the Mount is stripping that sense of self away. It is catching us first with a general awareness that we are the spirit, and then it is moving up and down our personality to remove every remnant of it in every possible form. Fasting. We'll take Good Friday. No fish Friday. No meat Friday. All of a sudden, it's all right. You can have all the meat you want on Friday, but at one time, if you obeyed one particular set of religious codes, you had a sense of guilt if you went out with the boys and you had yourself some meat on Friday. It was even unthinkable for many people. And yet when they had their meatless Fridays, that was a fairly good thing to talk about occasionally. A sort of a, I'm fasting today. And let everybody know that you're a very good practicing Catholic at that particular time. And every other religion had something of a similar nature. The Hebrew religion had fasting. And here the master within, because Jesus is gone. There's no more Jesus speaking the Sermon on the Mount. This is the voice of the Spirit. And now it tells men not to fast to be seen of men. Well, how then do you fast? It's teaching another kind of fasting. A fasting which has nothing to do with food and nothing to do with people. It's teaching the deeper esoteric method of fasting from the five senses. A withdrawal from the senses is the hidden language of symbolism, or fasting. Fasting from the evidence of the senses. And those who could read behind the lines were ready to know that the master within was teaching them that when they fast from the intellect, Christ speaks. When they fast from the world of images, Christ reveals divine images. And so this was the camouflage. It was almost like a parable. This was the double entendre. And if the world read it as fasting, they got nothing. And for that one here and there who read it as a deeper meaning, who listened, who knew that when the sense mind was still, God was speaking, then that one would learn that for us who are interested in the Christing, we must learn to permanently fast from the false witness of the human mind. But why must we fast from the human mind? Because if we do not, we are caught up in world thought. We are governed by world thought. We are attracted by those things of this world which seem very normal and desirable, but which are the perishables, with no spiritual content, which are not in the will of the Father. And once more we're on our own 2 feet and running, racing to attain of mine own self. But in our sabbatical from the senses, in our fasting, which is the meaning of the word in the true Christianity, we are truly then praying without ceasing. We are learning that we can look out at all of the sense indications this world can put before us and fast from them, accepting no sense evidence, surrendering our entire thought process as a human being to be resurrected into the thought processes of the infinite. And this inner ordainment comes through that developed capacity to hear with a different ear and to see with a different eye, to feel with a different sense of touch. The whole within is being opened up by these few words. You fast from the without so that you may experience the within. And it takes us right into, and when you pray, enter your closet. But it also says to keep the door shut. When you enter your closet, the door of your consciousness must be shut to this world. Now, this is the path of resurrection. And it has nothing to do with worshiping a man or a resurrected God. And the paradox of the Son of God being crucified becomes so clear. Each of us is the Son of God. The only crucifixion is now a painless one. The crucifixion of the sense of a physical world. Some of us are not ready for that. Some of us doubt our capacity to attain that. But all we are really doubting is that we are truly the offspring of Spirit. You see, Spirit doesn't have to attain anything. The one who is so uncertain of attainment is the one who is still clinging to the belief that I am a human who must attain. So you have more work to do in your closet, in which you close that human sense of life and rest in the acceptance of the presence of God. God hasn't anything to attain. God doesn't have to become Christed. God doesn't have to defend against the evils of the world. And in your closet, in your new developed consciousness, you will find you do not have to defend against the evils of the world. You are being led in an underground of the Spirit. Where the only power that exists is the grace of that Spirit. Where you do not attain, where you do not fast, where you do not do alms, where you do not pray. Where you do not repeat the errors of centuries of a world that seeks a God in the heaven above, where you do not make the mistake of all religions who pray to a concept which they call God, and wonder why this concept doesn't respond. Where you do not make the mistake of science, who makes an exhaustive study of the world of images, which it calls the material world. We're moving out of the realm of religion that is not religious, science that is unscientific, into a little closet of consciousness which opens out upon the infinite perfection of God. The Christ which stood where Jesus appeared, stepped upon a ship. And because the Christ does not live in time or in space, there was no consciousness of limited time or limited space to limit that ship. And so instantly the ship was on shore. The Christ, which stood where Jesus appeared to be, had no concept of lack. It had no consciousness of limitation. And because of the absence of a human mind, loaves and fishes could be multiplied instantly. Do you see what we're driving at? It wasn't the presence of Jesus which did the miracles, it was the absence of Jesus. That is his lesson. The absence of Jesus is the presence of Christ, and it doeth the works. Why callest thou me, Jesus, good? There is no me, Jesus, here. The Father within, he doeth the works. The Christ that I have attained by dropping the sense of Jesus, that doeth the works. And you see, it is going to be something very difficult for you to accept, but it will be the absence of you which doeth the works. Not the presence of you, but the absence of you. In the absence of your full sense of self, the Christ doeth the works. When you take away a human Jesus, you have lost the message. Because all you've got left then is God creating a divine Son, doing miracles through that divine Son, and where are you? But when you take out the false glorification, the false deification, when you take out all the political movers that established a formula and see facts as they are, that a human self was able to come through this bubble of matter and overcome the illusion of it and say, now that I've shown you the way, come along. Then, if you're willing to look and see the absence of that human self meant the presence of the invisible spirit, then you come to yourself and say, the absence of the human me is the presence of the invisible spirit. And that is true resurrection. That's what all these words in the Bible are leading to. The absence of you is the presence of your Christ self. Deny thyself means the absence of your physical sense of being. The absence of it produces the absence of your physical sense of the world. And that is the venting of the veil. The veil is rent the moment you have caught a glimpse of your undimensional self, which is independent of physical form, which is independent of time and place and space, and as this touches your consciousness, this moves throughout the universe. You become open to that new order of life which has been ever present awaiting your discovery. This is to be a resurrected universe with a consciousness that knows nothing of killing, nothing of hate, nothing of lack, nothing of limitation, but a consciousness of perfect reality. Not peopled by human beings, inhabited by the living Christ, individualized as each of us, the resurrected self. That's the purpose of the march to resurrection. To remove mirage. As a little child, you develop certain capacities, certain senses. As a spiritual child, you develop new capacities, new awareness. As a mature spirit, a mature spiritual adult, you walk in a different universe than the one you walked in yesterday. You walk in the resurrected universe. The universe that now is out picturing your new consciousness. Where bombs cannot fall. Where bullets cannot explode. Where there is no pain and no tears. If all this is untrue, then there was no point in the demonstration of Jesus and in the teaching of the Christ to those disciples. There was no point in Peter healing at the temple gate beautiful. There was no point in Paul moving through the world indifferent to personal pain. There was no point in an infinite way. There was no point in Buddha or Krishna. There was no point in any of the great spiritual seers on this earth if this is untrue. For each was alike revealing the same truth, that there is one power on this earth, and it is the power of love, and it is not dependent upon what man does or doesn't do. It is functioning independent of man right now, and it is present, and it is maintaining its perfect universe of love all around us, which can be experienced only in your spiritual self. And so, we do not pray as men pray. We do not fast as men fast. We do not give alms as men give alms. We retire into the center of our being, fasting from the world that is not, until we experience the universe that is. And we are in and of that which is the resurrection. And we are still walking in the appearance of flesh. We're not waiting for a physical crucifixion to crucify that which does not exist. We learn to walk in spiritual flesh. And then, your Father which knoweth in secret becomes the very law of your complete being. One Father, one universal Father, one universal spiritual being. Not one universal spiritual being and anything else. Just one universal spiritual being. Not one being supreme above others, but one supreme self is all there is. One infinite spiritual universe. Not to be attained in the future, but to be realized as ever present now. Fortunately, we still have about 6 more chapters in this book to strengthen our awareness of that invisible infinite universe all around us. And in that period of study, our concentration should be on that self which is not confined to this form. For when the resurrection of Jesus took place and the Christ stood where Jesus had been, there no longer was confinement to the form which men saw. All of this was told very eloquently in the Transfiguration. This was nothing more than a revelation of what had occurred in resurrection. Through the Transfiguration, which the disciples did not quite understand, they were permitted to see that the resurrected Christ stood there and not Jesus. Do you think that resurrected Christ has gone anywhere? Do you think that Christ was actually resurrected? Do you not see that the false sense of self dropped away and Christ, which was ever present, was self-revealing? Where is that Christ? Right where it ever was. Here. Right where you stand. If by some magic of the human mind it could drop away, you would witness the Transfiguration right here, right now, in which you, the Christ invisible, stood where the form appears to be. And this would be the truth revealing itself. And this will be the truth revealing itself to the degree that we learn to fast from the senses, to accept the oneness of the universe in spirit, the brotherhood of all in spirit, and refrain from pampering the human sense of things, but become instead as a child, a new spiritual child, ready to walk and to stumble no matter how often you have to pick yourself up until that glorious moment of certainty. When I need do nothing of myself in the recognition that grace is ever flowing. As we move ahead in these chapters, I'd like to bring the parables into them to show you the spiritual authority of the Christ, not only in every word of the sermon, but the consistency with which the Christ dramatized the sermon, and the consistency with which Joel, being the living Christ, was able to put the complete Christ consciousness before our eyes, revealing truth. All one message about the one infinite self. For those of you who are still anticipating troubles in meditation, we might end with the realization that Christ never has a problem meditating. What we call meditation is a normal way of breathing to Christ. And if we are unable to pierce the veil of human thought long enough to receive the impulse, the barrier is generally an inability to accept that Christ is all. When you work from that attitude, that Christ is all and there's no me here to meditate, it will be like the prodigal who, the moment he turned home, found the Father coming toward him. When you are willing to accept in consciousness that Christ being all, any human thought on your part is a denial of Christ, then you realize the barrier to the silence is your denial of Christ. You are denying Christ when you are unable to be silent, and you are further making a confession that your mind controls you and you do not control your mind. Just think, if you cannot control your mind, how that mind must be open to world thought. If I cannot control my mind, the world can do anything to my mind, and I have no way of defense. I must learn to control my mind. I must learn to control that mind in every conceivable way, or else the world will control it. There's no greater horror than leaving your mind exposed to this world. You must learn to control it. You must sit with it hours and hours upon time after time until it takes its orders from your consciousness. The penalty of not being able to control that mind is to be subject to all of the laws of karma of this world. You might just as well surrender your mind to this world as take a child and turn it out and put it in a den of thieves. Now, the effort that you then put in to take that mind and dominate it, which seems so strong at first, becomes easier when you finally learn that the mind is a mirage. When you start to analyze it, you find it's not even a mind. It's just a lot of opinions that have been pushed together through the centuries, standing there in one lump, calling itself your mind. It's a lot of sensation. It reacts to good, it reacts to evil. And it is going to keep reacting until there is a higher consciousness there preventing it from reacting. And that higher consciousness is looking to the hills of the soul. It's turning away from this mind. It's awakening from the hypnosis of this mind. It refuses to compromise God to this mind. It refuses to let a personal sense of me obstruct my path to perfection. Now we're silent. And you throw open the throttle so that you're not in that mind. You're coasting in neutral. You're not in any particular mind. You're able to just be wide open with no thought. Neither divine nor human, just no thought. There is a place where you find you can rest in a state of neither divine nor human thought. You locate it, and it's a very big place. It's just a state of nothingness. There are no people there, there are no things there. It's just a vastness. Nothing delineates. No ideas come. It's all a vacuum. Now, if you want to take thought, you may, but make sure your thought is about the Spirit. What did John mean when he said, if you love the world, the love of God is not in you? Well, he was telling me not to love the mirage, not to be fooled by the appearances. Not to go chasing after a handful of atoms. All right, I won't do it. But then the love of God is in me. And suddenly, like the wings of an eagle, I can soar. Where is this I that comes into the vacuum? That's the ego. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is provide the vacuum. And now turn your thought to God. That's so simple. Turn your thought to the perfect action of God. The perfect creation. The perfect spiritual universe. You still have no forms. You have ideas about harmony, about truth, about the nowness of spirit, the nowness of God, the nowness of being, about the fact that immortality is ever present. Nothing is mortal. All is immortal. You're beginning to find that the vacuum is filled by thoughts as you quietly contemplate. And though you're not aware of it while you're doing this, you're simply being taken out of the senses. You're not hearing sounds of the world or seeing sights of the world or thinking thoughts of the world. You're fasting. You're in the Sabbath. One meditation like this is a deepening process. If I have 10 of these a day, that makes 3,500 a year. I've been meditating this way for only 7 years, but it's still about 30,000 meditations. And in that length of time, you must learn something about how to meditate. You must drop the human mind and fall into the vacuum and be lifted by the Spirit quite a number of times. It's really like anything else. It requires your constant fidelity to doing it. And then you find it isn't a practice reserved for anybody who's particularly gifted at all. The capacity depends upon your use of it, your willingness to give the time to it. And then you can travel pretty well in the vacuum, contemplating or not, and recognizing a human thought if it dares to show its head, and quickly dispensing with it. This is how you develop the Christ mind, the mind that was in Christ Jesus, the mind that revealed there is no evil on the earth. All resurrection begins in the transformation from the mind of the man of earth to the silent mind, which ultimately attains the realization of the Christ mind. Resurrection is the transformation of the mind. First, we are generated into form, and then by the transformation of the mind, we are regenerated into Christ. You notice how we're not seeking anything, we're not asking for anything, we're not asking God to do something or change something. We're just in the river of Spirit. And let it do its work as it pleases. through you and through all that concerns you throughout the infinite spirit. You will learn to depend on this invisible grace as the source of all that is real. This is where you'll find the power of spirit in action. As this deepens, love will touch you in a different way. Love will flow unimpeded by human thought, and love will fulfill divine law where you stand. The only people on this earth whom Jesus attacked were the Pharisees and the scribes. And only because they were the greatest obstacle to love in this world. His attack on them visibly was only for the record, so that we could see that all who are incapable of love are cutting themselves off from spirit. Everywhere you look in the visible Jesus form that was the invisible Christ, you see love in expression. That is the nature of every miracle, love. And when you are incapable of that love, in that measure you will find your problems begin to appear. Because unless the love is flowing through you, you're in humanhood and not divinity. And that's how you'll know you're not in the divine self, when the feeling of love with you is not flowing. But when it is, you'll see the power of that love in every way. Those of you who have it are truly blessed. A very joyous Easter of love to all of you. And thank you.